Well, it was a good week for biology, the medical profession, and children with gender dysphoria last week. The narrative that children can change their sex with the aid of social transitioning, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, chest binders, and tucking is exploding before our eyes. Around the world, medical professionals are finally waking up to a radical activist experiment on our most vulnerable children. Now, unfortunately, New Zealand is still to come to the party, courtesy of an atrocious mainstream media who refuse to discuss this issue as they protect the radical ideology and its adherents. But we'll tell you, the House of Cards is finally falling. So the first major event was the release of leaked internal files from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH, which I told you about last week. And it proves that the practice of transgender medicine is neither scientific nor medical. Now, thousands of doctors worldwide rely on WPATH, including our own Ministry of Health, Te Whatu Ora. And it's also pushed by the Radical Association of New Zealand activists called PATHA in New Zealand, which is Professional Association for Transgender Health, Aotearoa. But there's nothing professional about it. The leaked internal files provided clear evidence that doctors and therapists are aware that they're offering minors life-changing treatments that they cannot fully understand. WPATH members know that puberty blockers, hormones, and surgeries will cause infertility and other complications, including possibly cancer and pelvic floor dysfunction. A growing number of medical and psychiatric professionals say the promotion of pseudo-scientific surgical and hormonal experiments is a global medical scandal. And it is. And it's not only the children that are unaware of the true consequences, mainly because they're too young and not mature enough to process it all. The WPATH members admit that parents really don't understand what's going on or what's going to happen either. Despite these admissions that clients are unable to give informed consent, WPATH members repeatedly engage in victim blaming, asserting that people who regret their irreversible procedures should have known what they signed up for. And regarding detransitioners, well, it's very telling. In reply to a post about a detransition study, the president of WPATH, Marcy Bowers, said, "Acknowledgement that detransition exists, even to a minor extent, is considered off-limits for many in our community." Well, yeah, we knew that. But WPATH guidelines are the authority here in New Zealand. Let me just show you. Guidelines for Gender-Affirming Healthcare in Aotearoa, New Zealand, comes out of the group PATHA, which is the New Zealand equivalent or affiliate to WPATH. And in their guideline documents, they specifically say this: WPATH is the international body responsible for producing standards of care. This guideline is not intended to replace the WPATH standards of care, but to give additional guidance for the provision of gender-affirming healthcare in New Zealand. Yep, so that's puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. WPATH is basically the go-to for guidelines around treatment for gender-confused children in New Zealand. And here's the Ministry of Health website as it stands, update at the beginning of this year. And you can see, specifically says, for referral acceptance to be considered, patients need to meet the eligibility criteria set out in the Standards of Care for the Health of Transsexual, Transgender and Gender Nonconforming People, published by, there we have it, WPATH version 7. Now, who is PATHA? Who's the New Zealand WPATH? PATH Aotearoa. Well, it was formed in 2018. It's a group of trans activists, some of whom have accidentally found their way into the medical professional setting, even though they're not medical professionals. But a member of the executive committee is a transgender woman, a New Zealand activist on the global board of directors for WPATH, and one of the authors of the latest revision of the WPATH Standards of Care. Now, the second bit of good news last week was that the NHS England has confirmed that children will be no longer prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics. The decision comes after an independent review of services for children under 18 and a sharp rise in referrals to the Gender Identity Development Service, run by Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust. Now, you've probably heard of Tavistock and the debacle that was happening there. The NHS, which is like the New Zealand Ministry of Health, said a lack of sufficient evidence relating to the safety and clinical effectiveness of puberty blockers for children and young people with gender incongruence dysphoria, including about the benefits, risks, and long-term outcomes. And they say psychosocial interventions will become the frontline response to gender distress. Yeah, counselling. The government said it welcomed the landmark decision, adding it will help ensure care is based on evidence and is in the best interests of the child. And puberty blockers were promoted as a safe, no-regrets option, merely pausing puberty. The marketing of blockers internationally since 2010 through to 2015 has been followed by an unprecedented surge in young patients, mostly teenage females, rejecting their birth sex and seeking hormonal interventions and surgeries. Now, these are chemical castration drugs used on sex offenders and those with prostate cancer. Of course, the big question is whether the NHS in the UK will also ban cross-sex hormones, or wrong-sex hormones, as I call them, which most young people on puberty blockers then progress to. And here is the trend of puberty blockers being prescribed in New Zealand. In fact, I've read that the level of prescription is about 10 times the amount in the UK based on per head of population. Shocking, isn't it? Now, you won't have read about the developments around WPATH or around the NHS's decision in New Zealand's mainstream media, eh? They have all covered it up and maintained radio silence on these key issues affecting our children. Why is that? Well, they're protecting a radical leftist ideology. And then at the beginning of this month, it was the Dutch and the Netherlands have pioneered gender-affirming treatment for children. But according to this report in the UK Telegraph, the Dutch government has been told to conduct research into the physical and mental health outcomes of children given puberty blockers, which is usually the first step on the pathway to changing your sex or trying to change your sex. Cross-sex hormone treatment and surgery often follow. But the reason that this is such a big deal is that the Netherlands pioneered the use of puberty blockers using guidelines known as the Dutch Protocol, which has been copied in the UK and around the world since it was first published by a clinic in Amsterdam in 1998. And the fact that the Dutch are now having doubts about a practice they effectively exported to the rest of the world have obvious implications. The Dutch protocol has three stages, and it's designed for patients who were then described as juvenile transsexuals. And the three stages are puberty blockers to stop natural development, cross-sex hormone drugs to masculinize or feminize the body, followed by surgery from age 18. And then Sweden, regarded as liberal and an exemplar in the field of LGBT rights, who have started restricting hormone therapy for children in 2022. Yeah, 2 years ago. And now only sanctions it in rare cases. But once again, you probably didn't hear about that. Norway, according to a report at the end of February 29th, a report in the Norwegian newspaper Verdensgang, I think is how you say it, the medical directors of Norway's four regions have determined that puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for gender-distressed minors are experimental and should be restricted to clinical trials. And the Directorate of Health will be asked to revisit its 2020 gender-affirming treatment guidelines and clearly state the experimental nature of these hormonal and surgical treatments. So, the decision in the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, you probably weren't aware of it. Our media certainly didn't tell you about them. And then, at the end of January, the mainstream media also didn't tell you about landmark research from Finland. which found that suicide risk in a large group of adolescents was predicted by the psychiatric problems that often accompany gender distress, not by the gender distress itself. And I'm quoting from coverage by Bernard Lane, who writes on Substack under Gender Clinic News, and he says this: dramatic claims of the risk of suicide or attempted suicide amongst trans-identifying youth are typically based on low-quality, anonymous, online self-reported surveys with no follow-up checks, potential exaggeration driven by a constant transition or suicide narrative, and convenient samples unlikely to be represented. Here's the paper. The new Finnish study vindicates that country's 2020 adoption of a more cautious treatment policy, which first targets psychiatric, social, and educational problems amongst gender-distressed youth before any assumption of a stable trans-identifying, identity justifying experimental affirmation with hormones or surgery. The researchers said it is of utmost importance to identify and appropriately treat mental disorders in adolescents experiencing gender dysphoria to prevent suicide. In addition, health policies need to ensure that accurate information is provided to professionals along these lines. Now, the research team included psychiatrist, I'm not even going to attempt to say the name, but they're from the Tampere University Faculty of Medicine, and the psychiatrist helped pioneer pediatric gender medicine in Finland, but became concerned when she and her colleagues did not see the good outcomes promised by the internationally imitated Dutch protocol. And in fact, a former president of the US WPATH, the US WPATH section, said that she believed other scientific reviews yet to be published will also raise questions about the assumption that gender-affirming medicines for youth are protective and prevent suicide. And the point is made here. This is the key. Parents hesitant about these poorly evidenced medical interventions have reportedly been asked by clinicians, do you want a live son or a dead daughter? The suicide narrative also figures in the practice of schools keeping a child's social transition secret from parents. Ministry of Education have well and truly been suckered into that one. It's been the suicide narrative figures in the shutting down of debate about the efficacy and safety of hormonal and surgical interventions, and in the promotion of ill-defined bans on conversion therapy and hate speech. Ah, the bubble's starting to burst. You're starting to see the inside here, aren't you? It finishes, although the rate of suicide in the Finnish study is just over 4 times higher amongst trans youth people than their peers, this is explained by their more serious psychiatric problems. When these psychiatric problems are taken into account, there is no evidence that transgender people have a higher rate of suicide. Now, Dr. Ken Zucker is a Toronto-based clinical psychologist, researcher, editor of the Journal Archives of Sexual Behaviour. In fact, he chaired the DSM-5 diagnostic workgroup, which replaced the term gender identity disorder with the term gender dysphoria in 2013. But he told Bernard Lane at the Gender Clinic News, he said this: there is a trope that has been around now for a number of years. Would you rather have a trans kid or a dead kid? It has been said that this trans kid or dead kid trope is used to engender fear and anxiety in parents who are uncertain what the best therapeutic approach should be in helping an adolescent with gender dysphoria. Although we know that adolescents and adults with gender dysphoria report suicidal ideation and suicide attempts at a rate higher than non-clinical populations, the rates are, by and large, similar to what one sees in many mental health conditions. So there we have it. WPATH, UK, Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, study from Finland, but you probably know none of these. because the mainstream media in New Zealand don't report this because it goes against their narrative. In fact, Stuff News, for example, has a policy that they won't even discuss this issue. Let me show you an example. A majority of the Media Council found this piece at the end of 2022 was unbalanced. You can see there that Stuff have had to admit that in the circle down the bottom there. But in Stuff's defence, if you can call it a defence, Stuff's decision not to provide balance was endorsed by the Dominion Post editor, who wrote in response to the complaint this, that just as media used to approach climate change deniers for stories on climate change, accepted science offers a more useful approach for readers. In other words, what they're saying is the science is settled on chemicalizing and castrating young people to change their sex, apparently, according to the media. But it's not. Now, in fact, researcher Jan Rivers did a spreadsheet analysing Stuff's coverage over 3 years, just under 50 stories about puberty blockers during that time, and it showed only stories that were almost entirely uncritically positive about gender medicine for children. None contained any detail of these emergent uncertainties overseas. But now you know. The narrative around puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, chest binding, social transitioning, preferred pronouns, the whole narrative is crumbling before our eyes. The tipping point has been reached, it seems, which is a good thing. It's only the media holding it up here in New Zealand. Don't let them. Share this McBlog. Tell people the truth. Be the media. We need a fact-based media in New Zealand. And that's why we're here.